From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I am thrilled and excited and losing my mind about today's show. We have a fantastic Current Sports ready for you today. As on today's show, I'll give you a kind of a sneak preview into my Current Sports TV sit-down with MSU hoop great Mateen Cleaves. You don't want to miss that. We'll also give you a motivational moment from motivational speaker DeAndre Carter. Talk about the Tigers, who just can't seem to get things right. And how about the New York Rangers staying alive? Throwback Thursday is also right around the corner. That and so much more on today's show. But before we get to it, we got to get to your Current Sports quick hit headliners. And before we do that, I want to just kind of note this, that DeWitt, the DeWitt boys baseball team, they fell this morning 2-1 in a state semifinal match with Richmond. An unbelievable season for the DeWitt Panthers. Hats off to Alan Schenkel, who did an outstanding job with his young men. They played over at on the campus of Michigan State University. Again, DeWitt falling 2-1 in the state semifinal match to end their season against Richmond. Right now, the only other local team when it comes to the bat action, that only local team that's left, folks, is the Fowler girls softball team, which will be playing soon as well. So we'll keep you updated on that as that ensues. But this morning, just want to give a congrats to DeWitt, though, on an outstanding season coming up just short in that quest for a state championship, a Division II state championship. Again, 2-1, Richmond tops them on the campus of Michigan State University. Okay, well, that's only just a snippet of our Current Sports quick hit headliners. Here's Alex Sharg with the rest.
Good afternoon. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Thursday, June 12th. Michigan's 2015 recruiting class continues to take shape, and this time, the Wolverines were able to win a battle against a coach who hasn't lost many in recent months. That is Penn State's James Franklin. Yes, 2015 four-star offensive tackle prospect Grant Newsom announced via Twitter on Wednesday that he's committed to play for Brady Hoken, Michigan. The 6'7", 280-pound Newsom, who thanks Franklin and Penn State in his statement, Rate says the number 22 overall offensive tackle prospect nationally in 247sports.com's composite rankings. The composite has the New Jersey product as the number 192 overall player in the class. The Detroit Tigers have now lost three straight as their struggles continue. They fell 8-2 against the Chicago White Sox last night on the road with JV Justin Verlander on the mound. The Tigers now have lost 8 of their last 10 and have lost 5 straight against teams from the AL Central. The Tigers have also lost their last 4 games on the road. They are back in action tonight against the White Sox at 8:10 p.m. first pitch. Max Scherzer takes the mound against Chris Sale in a thrilling pitching duel. In other Tigers news, they reached a deal with Derek Hill, the number 23 overall pick in last week's amateur draft, according to multiple reports. Hill committed to play baseball at the University of Oregon last March, but now will opt out of his commitment. He has reportedly signed a $2 million bonus with the Tigers, which is slightly above the $1,953,000 value slotted to the 23rd overall selection. Hill is expected to undergo a physical at the team spring training facility in Lakeland before signing his first professional contract on Sunday. To the ice, 24-year-old defenseman Danny DeKeyser earned a local accolade this week as he was named the 2013-14 Red Wings Rookie of the Year by the Detroit Sports Broadcasters Association. DeKeyser is a Macomb native and was signed as an undrafted free agent out of Western Michigan in March 2013. He appeared in 11 games in the 2012-13 season, then 65 games this past season as he tallied 4 goals and 19 assists. The New York Rangers stay alive against the Kings, at least for now. Henrik Lundqvist made 40 saves and had the Madison Square Garden crowd chanting his name in the Rangers' 2-1 victory in Game 4 Wednesday night that kept the Kings from a sweep. Martin St. Louis added a goal for the Rangers, and L.A. leads the series 3-1 and will get its second shot to claim the cup for the second time in 3 years Friday night at home. Los Angeles hoped to become the first team since 1998 to complete a sweep in the finals, but that unfortunately was not happening. The Rangers will try to become the second team to erase a 3-0 hole in the finals and go on to win the Cup. The U.S. Open has begun officially, ladies and gents. This year, the event is being held at Pinehurst Resort and Country Club, and it's the second straight year of the Tiger-less Open, seeing though Tiger Woods is still recovering from back surgery. But there are still many notable golfers competing in the tourney. Right now, Grant Snedeker leads the pack at 4-under, and we will keep you updated throughout today's show. The first World Cup game starts today between Brazil and Croatia at 4 p.m. The first game features the host country team Brazil and will be aired on ESPN. In other soccer news, it was announced Wednesday that soccer star Landon Donovan will join ESPN's World Cup coverage. This comes following the release of Landon Donovan from Team USA in this year's World Cup. Landon is the leading scorer in U.S. soccer history. And finally, in wake of failed drug testing, UFC fighter and title holder Chael Sonnen has officially retired. It's the end of a 17-year career, which he began in 1997. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. The lines are now open. Time to send it back to Al for the show.
All right. How about Chael Sonnen? Great career for Chael. But, you know, after really the news coming out that he had failed yet another drug test, he talked his way out of the first one. Really did a good job at that. But, hey, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Okay. And I think he got that message. A great career. We'll talk about Chael, you know, retiring. He is one of probably, if not the biggest mouthpiece in the history of UFC. If you have not witnessed a Chael Sonnen interview, it is sort of kind of like, it reminds you of Floyd Mayweather rocking the mic during the interview, boasting about how he's the best in the game, how he's the best in the sport, how he was put on this earth to just beat everybody. It's a pretty entertaining, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, if you will, part of your life if you ever have seen a Sonnen interview. It's interesting stuff, but he decides to hang it up. I mean, hey, second drug test you fail, hey, I guess reality hits you and says, okay, I can't slither my way out of this one. I don't want to wait a year to fight. Let me just call it a wrap. He'll be great, a great TV personality. I could see him with his own show. So, but man, so much going on. And right now, I just want to give you guys a quick correction. The U.S. Open is taking place right now, one of golf's biggest majors. And it's a battle right now. Looking at who's leading the pack right now, as you just heard, Alex Sharg at the time when doing those headliners had seen Brant Snedeker at the top of that leaderboard. But now Kevin Na is tied with Graham McDowell and Jordan Spieth at 2-under. Now, Brant is right behind that pack at 1-under, along with Henrik Stenson at 1-under and Matt Kuchar at 1-under, Brendan Todd at 1-under, Ricky Fowler at 1-under. So, yeah, it's a lot going on right now, and Brendan Todd and Ricky, they're still playing right now. Brendan through 17 and Ricky through 16. So we'll keep you updated. And how about Jordan Spieth? And Jordan Spieth is also still playing right now. He's through 16 and is at 2-under. This young kid is so impressive. It just seems as though pressure, he doesn't know what pressure means. I always love the saying, pressure either busts pipes or makes diamonds. And right now, this kid is showing that he is certainly a diamond in the rough. And he just constantly impresses me whenever he goes out there and brings the clubs out and competes against the world's best. Jordan Spieth, it's just such a young kid going out there and competing with the world's best, I tell you. You know, it's kind of a bittersweet weekend for me in the U.S. Open because, as you all know, that the Detroit Pistons are my favorite team. But my favorite athlete is, hands down, bar none, Tiger Woods. Yes, Eldrick Tiger Woods is my man. Now, I know all of the controversy and drama that he went through back in the day when it came to his marriage and so on and so forth. But Tiger Woods, to me, I mean, he's one of those athletes that you put his name in the category of the greats, like a Muhammad Ali, like a Michael Jordan, a Larry Bird, a Pelé, you know, some of the greatest individuals to ever play a sport. Tiger Woods, his name deserves to be in that running, without a doubt. And I became a fan of Tigers dating all the way back to high school. My stepdad, he was a big, huge Tiger Woods fan and really introduced me to at least viewing the sport. And I just fell in love with the guy. He was so charismatic, and I just loved the way he played the game. He played it so fierce. And now for me, this is a bittersweet weekend for me because I love the U.S. Open. Again, it's one of the most prestigious golf tournaments in the game. And I love watching it every single year, but I love watching Tiger Woods play more. And the fact that Tiger Woods, again, due to that back surgery, the fact that he is not playing this weekend, it kind of turns me off. And I'm sure it turns off a lot of people. If you look at the proof is in the pudding. If you look at the ratings when Tiger Woods is not playing, it doesn't even have to be a major. If it's just a golf tournament that Tiger Woods is not playing, the ratings dip significantly. Now, I will be keeping up with the U.S. Open, partly because I love golf. I love the tournament. And, hey, it's my job. So I definitely will be keeping up with it. But, man, there will be many people who will not be watching it at all and probably just keeping up with it on their smartphone or tablet or the use of the internet on their laptop just for the simple fact that Tiger Woods is not playing. But, hey, it should be a great weekend nonetheless. Later on in the show, we'll talk about our predictions on who's going to win the U.S. Open and just the popularity of golf without Tiger Woods in general, because that's certainly always a discussion. And in just a moment, you're also going to hear my sit-down with MSU point guard great, Mateen Cleaves. Yes, Mateen, I mean, he's a legend here in Lansing and in the world of Sparty. Looking at, the 2000 championship win and all that he's done around this area. I mean, Mateen is a household name in mid-Michigan. I got a chance to sit down with him. He visited the WKAR TV studios last night at 6 p.m. It was a great time with a fantastic crowd. Want to give a special shout out and special thanks to all of those who came out to last night's taping. I had a great time picking Mateen's brain. And you know what? Those of you who tune in each and every weekday here on WKAR AM 870 to tune into Current Sports at 1 o'clock, from 1 to 2 o'clock, those dedicated Current Sports fans and listeners are going to be rewarded today by getting a sneak preview of that sit down right here, right today on this here radio show. So you don't want to miss that. So that'll be coming up in about 5 minutes or so. Before I get to that, every single week we try to bring a pretty cool, a very special segment here on the show entitled Motivational Moments with DeAndre Carter. Now, for those of you who have been tuning in the past few weeks here or so, you know that DeAndre Carter is an outstanding guy. He was one of my mentors when I was in college. He's an inspirational speaker and is pretty good at it. And also, DeAndre is a pretty big sports fan. He's a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and you can probably see him walking around campus right now, rocking, a Pittsburgh Steelers hat or shirt or something black and gold on him. So he's a good friend, and we decided to bring this interesting segment to Current Sports Radio because I've always looked at sports, and we always talk about going beyond the X's and O's here on Current Sports. I've always looked at sports as not only a realm of entertainment, but also a realm that can teach you a lot about life and can frankly inspire you. I remember back in the day, I'm a big Michael Jordan fan. Watching Michael play inspired me to back in high school to just be great at whatever I did. I mean, Michael would always preach that being great at whatever you do starts with the day-to-day preparation and excellence and time that you put into your craft. And Michael displayed that, and he constantly preached that, off the court, no matter if you're playing the game of basketball or if you're bagging groceries at Meijer. To be great at what you do should mean a lot to you. And Michael can, sports can inspire you on so many different levels and teach you about life. And that's the reason why we want to bring this segment to you. Again, Motivational Moments with DeAndre Carter. And on today's Motivational Moment, DeAndre wanted to bring, with the NBA Finals going on and Tim Duncan going against LeBron James, two basketball legends, the chapter two of this whole Spurs and Heat rivalry now in the finals. DeAndre is a big NBA guy and wanted to sort of motivate you all by taking a look at what exactly makes LeBron James great and what exactly makes Tim Duncan great. DeAndre, take it away.
The NBA Finals are here, and we have a battle between legends going on. And this is a battle between the quiet hunger of Tim Duncan and the daily greatness of LeBron James. Learn from the best on today's Motivational Moment.
Thomas kicks it out, Lewis. James on the attack, goes to the rim! LeBron James wanted a foul as well. Impressive move.
Take that, Doc.
Yes, the king, the chosen one. For all of those years, he couldn't do it. He ran into failure. First against the Spurs, where he got swept out of the finals, and then against the Mavs, where he came up short. But it was different this time around when he faced the Spurs. He realized that he needed to add to his game. As talented as he was, as incredible as he was, he knew that that wasn't good enough. He had to make changes. And I'm here to let you know the lesson to learn from LeBron is the practice of daily greatness. Because what you do daily demands a result. Anything you do over and over again will result in some type of change in your life. And so one of the things that LeBron did is he consulted Hakeem Olajuwon. He said, I wanted to have a stronger post game. He worked on that. That showed up. That added another element to his game. But the key that really cinched it, his mid-range game. And it came through in game 7 because as brilliant as Greg Popovich is, he had scouted out that LeBron had a weakness in his game. There was a chink in the King's armor and it was giving him a jumper. And I don't know if you remember this, but in game 7, I watched and I saw the MVP of the league wide open time after time after time. And I was amazed. Who would leave the best player in the world wide open? And then it was very clear that LeBron no longer had that kink in his armor. And I want to tell you the reason why. It was daily greatness. It was because hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times every day, LeBron shot jump shots. In fact, it was said that if he had media engagements or if he was going to film a commercial for you or if he was going to do anything, making an appearance at your event, you had to make time in the schedule and make sure that there was a basketball court near because he needed to put in hours to work on that jump shot. So the goal is you have to make sure that you're putting in time to achieve daily greatness. And the 2-for-1 special comes just like this. On the flip side, last year, we had a guy who was a 4-time champion and he also came up short. His name is Tim Duncan.
Good search out by Ginobili to find Duncan against the smaller Battier, and then another point-blank miss with a chance to tie. The greatest power forward to ever play. Tough luck.
And the lesson to learn from him is to have a quiet, quiet hunger. See, you have to learn to use your misery as your motivation. Use your irritation as your inspiration. The pain from last year is still burning in his head. You know, because after he hit that shot in game 6 against OKC, he popped his jersey. Now, I've never seen Tim Duncan do that. I've seen that from Kobe Bryant or other, but not Tim Duncan. But he was still fired up even after the game. He was quoted as saying, people keep talking like we weren't close to winning it last year, like we weren't ready last year. Well, this year, we are happy for the opportunity. We're happy that it's the Heat again. We have 4 more to win, and we'll do it this time. I don't know about you, but I've never heard Tim Duncan make a guarantee. But this year, he has that quiet hunger. So I don't care whether you've won in the past or you've lost in the past, or maybe you've done a mixture of both. You must put in some daily greatness and carry a quiet hunger. And then tomorrow will always be brighter than yesterday. The moment is yours. Make the most of it. Thank you for listening to this motivational moment with DeAndre Carter on Current Sports with Al Martin. For more motivational moments, you can find us at www.deandrecarter.com under Motivational Moments. You can also follow me on social media, on Instagram at DC Greatness, on Twitter at DC Inspires, and on Facebook at DeAndre Carter. We are here to inspire you. Be prepared to be great.
All right, thanks a lot. That was motivational speaker DeAndre Carter bringing you yet another motivational moment right here on Current Sports. I love the twist that he gave there. If that doesn't motivate you, I don't know what will, folks. Go out there and be great. I love sports again. We talk about going beyond the X's and O's always here on the show. And we always love to relate that, of course, to sports. We are relating that directly to sports. And you know what? That right there, if that doesn't epitomize what we try to do, I don't know what will. Thanks a lot, DC. Again, if you want to nominate a motivational moment that you would like DeAndre to speak upon, you can simply do so by going to facebook.com/currentsports or even tweeting me at Al Martin WKR if you want him to talk about the U.S. Open, talk some golf, or possibly on, you know, give it a soccer twist with the World Cup starting today. You can do so. You can nominate that if you want DeAndre to talk about a special moment in sports and to try to give it a motivational twist. Go to Facebook.com. Again, Facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, you will get to hear from one of the greatest Spartans to ever hit the hardwood, my team Cleve. Just a special sneak peek into Current Sports TV. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Start spreading the news.
Welcome back to Current Sports. Alex Shark, nice job, man. It's Throwback Thursday, so we're playing a lot of old school music, you know, from the likes of Frank Sinatra and so on and so forth. Gotta love that. Throwback Thursday, ladies and gents. Well, I tell you what, going back in time to the year 2000, yes, you all remember that. Spartan fans, that year was a great year due to the fact that the MSU men's basketball team became the best men's basketball program in the entire nation, hoisting the NCAA championship. And you know what? Who was a huge factor? You know who was a huge factor to that whole thing? Yes, MSU point guard. Great. Martin Cleaves. How can you forget that incredible moment with him, you know, just shedding tears alongside head coach Tom Izzo? You know, the emotion of that moment. I still remember I was 10 years old. I remember sitting in the living room, socks off, next to my grandfather, watching that incredible moment. Who knew that I would, you know, go to school at MSU and become a sports reporter right around here in the area? Man, it's kind of a full circle moment when I go back in time and think about that. But, you know, it's a moment that many won't forget, including myself. I got a chance to sit down with my teen to talk about that moment and so much more. He gave his thoughts on, of course, the upcoming season for the MSU men's basketball team. And taking a look back at last year, as the expectations, the high expectations for that team were certainly not met. We talked about that and so much more. It was a great time sitting down with my team. And as a reward for all of you who tune in each and every weekday here on WKAR AM 870 and tune in to Current Sports from 1 to 2 each and every day, we're going to reward you guys by giving you a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV interview with Cleves. Here it is, my sit down with my team. Enjoy it. Martin Cleaves, what's going on, my brother?
What's up, baby?
Thank you for joining me this week. Appreciate it.
Come on, you know, it's come on the Al Martin show. Come on, I couldn't miss this.
It's all love. It's all love. Well, thank you. Thanks a lot, Martin. Now, first, I want to start off this thing. I gotta ask you, you know, going back in time for a minute, because we just finished talking about, of course, Aaron Harris, who's a sharp shooting. I mean, one of the best shooters in the nation coming to Izzo's program. I want to go back in time really quick and talk about this past season, because MSU, the expectations were high. You had everybody and their mama, including the president of the United States, predicting that MSU would win the NBA, the NCAA championship. Didn't happen. What were your thoughts on it?
A little disappointed, to be honest, because, you know, me being a Spartan, you know, I wanted them to win it. I was rooting for them. And even me being an analyst, I thought they had the best shot to win it. I thought Florida had a well-balanced team. But I thought Michigan State probably was the best team, you know, because the way they played, the inside, outside, they had Payne inside, Gary Harris. They had, you know, with Coach Izzo, you know, on the sideline, they had everything going for them. They finally got healthy. It seemed like going into the NCAA tournament. So I was shocked pretty much like everybody. I was shocked and hurt, you know, that they were not able to pull it off.
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, Izzo, he always says that he would rather kind of float under the radar, not have that target and attention on your back, because with that comes a lot of responsibility.
You know what? And I felt the same way, because we were kind of under the radar before the Big Ten tournament. Mm-hmm. Then we went through the Big Ten tournament. We beat Michigan, and, you know, we won the Big Ten tournament. And everybody started jumping back on the bandwagon, yeah, man. So that was the kiss of death. That hurt us, right? That was bad luck for us.
It
man.
Was. So you felt as though if that happened, if MSU didn't win that Big Ten tournament and float under the radar, you think they would be hosting the trophy then, huh?
I won't say that, but I know we wouldn't have had everybody jump on the bandwagon. You know, because when we won the Big Ten tournament and everybody said, oh, Michigan State is back, yeah.
Right.
And everybody jumped on the bandwagon. So I just thought it was a kiss of death, and it was bad luck for us Spartans.
Martin, 14 years have now passed since the last time this area has raised an NCAA men's basketball championship. You were a part of that squad, of course, one of the greatest leaders in Spartan lore. I got to ask you, looking back at all the years that have passed since that moment, mm-hmm. does it really put in perspective just how special that team was and just how special you have to be to win a championship?
Yeah, you know, it's not easy to win a national championship. And we've been blessed to have other teams go to the Final Four and even play for a national championship. But that you just don't win national championships. And I think that's what made us special. That's not to knock the other teams that came, you know, after us. We had a special team. And the thing about us, everybody bought into winning. Nobody cared who got the credit. Nobody cared who was the leading scorer. It didn't matter to us. We had a great group of guys, a family, that just believed in one goal, and that was to win a national championship.
Now with a lot of pieces now moving for this team, of course, Adrian Payne is now gone, taking his talents to the NBA. Gary Harris, who was a famed shooting guard throughout his 2 years here with mm-hmm. the program, he's now gone. Keith Appling, the point guard, he's trying to make the league. With those, just looking even at those three components of the team, now moving on to try to make their dreams come true in the NBA, what is your outlook for next year's team right now, Mateen?
You know, a lot of people want to say it's a rebuilding year for us. No, we Spartans, baby. We reload. We don't rebuild.
I like that.
Yes, and we got some pieces coming in. Tom, you know, Ross, he's coming in. I think he's that alpha dog we've been missing. You know, Dawson, I watched him play the other day in the gym, man. He looks great. The jump shot is going in. His body looked terrific. He's all the way healthy. And so, Costello, I think he's going to take up some of that slack with Payne leaving. We're going to be all right. I'm not worried about it. You know, a lot of people that don't really understand it, you know, because we are, it's tough when you lose two, possibly three pros. I mean, it's hard to come back that next year. But I truly believe that Michigan State is going to be a lot better than what people are giving us credit for.
Mateen, now, I mean, you've been through, you know, hoisting a championship. Do you go back and talk frequently with the players who are on the current squad and give them any advice as to the mindset that it takes to go through a season and have success in the NCAA tournament?
All the time. You know, I come back and I say, pull up a chair, young fella. I mean, let me tell you how to win a national championship. No, but I do. Because I appreciate the guys coming back when I was here. Magic Johnson, Steve Smith, the other guys that will come back and encourage us and give us advice. And I always talk to them. It's really about winning as a mentality. And that's the key. It's a process. It's not just going out there hitting a switch and you win games. Nah, it's a process. Practice has to be 10 times harder than the game. Going to the gym, working out, getting up extra shots, going to the film room, watching hours and hours of film. It's a process. You just don't win national championships. So I just tell the guys to continue to play hard, work hard, keep it a family atmosphere. And if you do that, man, then you give yourself the best chance to go out and possibly win a championship.
Give it up for that, guys. That's great advice, right? It's good stuff. All right, Mateen, I want to shift gears really quick and talk about your career after MSU. Okay. Now, of course, you were drafted by the Pistons, went on to play for the Kings, the Sonics, Celtics, Cavs, and even overseas in Greece and Russia. When you finally decided to hang up the sneaks and call it a career, how tough was it for you to let the game of basketball go?
It was tough. It was tough because that's all you know. You know, from yay big, basketball was in my hand, and football-wise, I was an athlete, so it was tough because that's all I knew. That was a part. Basketball was such a big part of my life. But then again, for me, it made the transition easier because I had something to fall into. You know, a lot of guys get to that point and they don't know what they're going to do. And I did. I was at that point where I really didn't understand, but I had a manager. My manager, Willa Cooper, we had a game plan. And once I was done playing, it was like, you know, I hit the ground running. So that made it easier, the transition easier for me to make. But do I miss it? I do. I do. I miss the competition. I miss the camaraderie. I miss the locker rooms and traveling and being around my teammates. I do miss it, but I did have other things going on, so it made my transition easy.
Do you still get a chance to play at all in rec leagues or pickup games?
Every now and then. I put on a few pounds now. You know, I can't do the stuff I used to do. You know, I see sometime I want to get to the basket, and it was there, but it's not there anymore because I just couldn't do it. But I mess around a little bit and go to the YMCAs when I'm back at home in Flint.
Mateen, was there one single moment where you had to just take a step back and look at it and say, hey, I think I'm done here? Was there a moment where it hit you?
That's a good question. It was. It was when I was in training camp with Denver Nuggets. I played great. You know, I went up there. I was the leader of the team. You know, they had Carmelo Anthony, Allen Iverson, and I came in. I was a free agent. I was the leader of the team. Played great. the coaches, everybody said I was going to make the team, and then the owner, they were doing cutbacks, and they didn't want to pay this luxury tax and the business part of it.
Politics.
Yeah, which I hate. And, you know, when I played great, and then I felt that I was not getting out of basketball what I was putting into it, it was time for me to be done. And, you know, give some of the younger guys an opportunity to come play. Because at that time, I mean, the veterans on that team that they cut was myself, Reuben Patterson, Smush Parker, Juwan Howard. So they didn't keep anybody.
Right.
So, yeah, at that point, I just said I had fun with it. It was great. Time to take the next step in my life.
Well, you've definitely done some great things when it comes to your career after basketball. Mateen, for you, looking at that whole experience, though, what is the key? If you had to give any advice to Gary Harris or an Adrian Payne or even Keith Appley, what would you tell them is the key to longevity in the NBA?
First of all, take care of your body. You know, I think that was one thing that really hurt me, because coming up as a kid, I always was taught play through injuries. And, you know, and it was times, yeah, where I probably should have set out, you know, and been out maybe a month and a half, maybe 2 months, and I was back in 3 or 4 weeks, you know, just trying to tough it out. So the first thing, take care of your body. Learn how to become a professional. Learn how to become a professional on the court and off the court. Always treat people the right way. And I think if you work hard, simple as that, man. You know, I know that's kind of cliche. Everybody say, well, if you work hard. But if you do work hard and go in there and listen to the veterans, then you can hang around a long time.
Ladies and gents, you can catch Mateen on Fox Sports Detroit as an analyst for the Detroit Pistons. And, of course, I catch you all the time in my car when Sirius XM. It's always a fun time listening to you on the radio as well. Now, you being a part of the NBA in that capacity now as a broadcaster, I mean, you get to see the stories and the headliners and talk about the dynamics of the game on the professional level.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those conversations that kind of have a local feel is Tom Izzo, your former coach, possibly making that jump to the National Basketball Association as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Izzo will ever make that leap, Mateen?
I hope he don't, personally, because he does a great job here. He's really good at taking boys and making them be men. And, I mean, he's such an integral part in a lot of these young guys' lives. So I love what he's able to do with the kids here. But in saying that, I do think he could make the jump. Everybody questioned if he could go on the next level. If he could, he could, because he knows how to crack the whip, push the guys, but then again, he knows when to fall back. He has a great feel for people and know when to say what to say and how to say certain things to get people motivated. And I think he has a gift for that. And I think in that reason, he would be able to have success on the next level. But I hope he don't go. I hope he do not leave.
I'm sure many people, you guys don't want him to go, right? No, that's not going to happen. But, you know, it's so interesting because you talk about that dynamic of being able to push people and also have that other aspect to make them become better people as well, you know, off the court.
Right.
People question whether or not, because you see Tom Izzo, he's so fiery on the sidelines, Mateen. And how that translates to the NBA, you really don't see a lot of coaches do that, you know, get in your face, yell at you. Maybe other than Greg Popovich, and he gets the most out of his players in that regard. Mm-hmm. But they question whether or not that style will fit in the NBA game.
You know why it'll work with Coach Izzo? Because he cares about people. And once the players understand that he cares about them, they're not going to take it personal when he get in their face. The same thing at Michigan State. Coach Izzo would grab my jersey, and he said certain things I can't say on TV. But I knew he was saying those things because he wanted me to play better. He wanted me to have success. And that's what I think was going to translate well, whether he's here or on the NBA level. He care about his players, man. If you care about your players, man, they'll run through a brick wall for you.
That is so true. Mateen, before I let the 12th man throw some questions at you, I definitely got to bring up this.
Okay.
One goal, one passion, an extraordinary basketball camp that you have been doing for quite some time, right?
Yeah, that's my baby right there. My mother was always an advocate in our community and helping kids, and my mom and dad. And for me, that's just something, that's my calling, I think. I love to help, and I give camps. I give a camp in Flint, Michigan. I give a camp in Lansing. I give a camp in Benton Harbor. Free, never charge kids to teach them how to play basketball.
A free camp.
Free camp. Somebody taught me how to play, so how could I charge a kid? And I didn't have money to pay for camps when I grew up. So that's something that I always said, if I'm ever in a position to help kids or do for others, I'm going to do it. And that's my way of giving back. And not only the basketball camps, we did a thing called Hope for the Holidays over the holiday season. And we provided for over 1,000 families. And, you know, we got them vouchers from Myers, gift cards and food and the vouchers for water bills. bills, electricity bills, and these working class families that are just trying to make ends meet around the holiday season. So it's not just about basketball, because when I get the kids in the gym, basketball is the draw. But right. when I get them there, I hit them with the life skills, the setting goals, how to, the nutrition, eco-friendliness. So I get them in the gym with the dangling with the basketball. But once yeah. they get there, we hit them with a whole array of different things.
A rat to cheese, right? A
yes,
rat
sir.
To cheese.
Yes, sir.
Gotta love that, Mateen. Yep. And really briefly, you know, you growing up in Flint, you know, it kind of hits me home, too, because mm-hmm. I grew up in Detroit. You know, not the best of areas.
Right.
You the same way. I mean, growing up in Flint, mm-hmm. how important, you know, looking at your background in that regard, mm-hmm. was it for you to give back, looking at your past?
Oh, it's very important. It's very important because if we don't give back, who is? Don't nobody care about our cities like we do. And I just think it's our duty to give back, because when I came up, a lot of the kids from my era looked up to the wrong people. They looked up to the drug dealers. They looked up to the people that were doing wrong. When I go home, I want them to look up to me. I want them to be able to touch a guy that made it to the NBA and know that he's right from the same street you're from and the same area that you're from, and you can be successful. I always tell kids, it's not about being a professional athlete. That don't make you a professional. You know, you can be a professional without playing sports. So that's my message to the kids, and I think it's very important. And I encourage other guys, you know, successful businessmen, people that go to work every day, to interact with these kids. Go to the Boys and Girls Clubs. Go to these community centers back in your hometowns, because they need to hear it. They need to understand, because our kids sometimes look up to the wrong people. But I encourage them, and I love the fact that kids look up to me, and when I'm around interacting with them, man, I tell you, it's just the best feeling in the world to be able to help kids, man. And that's my thing.
Give it up for that. I love that. You feel the passion when you talk about
yeah,
it, Mateen.
Buddy.
All right, man, you got five more minutes?
Man, I'm here, man. Let's go.
Stick around, Mateen, because the 12th
gotcha.
Man starts right now. All right. As you see, the 12th man is pumped. It is now time for the 12th man, where we will take questions from our live studio audience right here at WKRTV Studios. And Mateen, I got some pretty interesting questions for you. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Here we go. Question one. Taylor from Kalamazoo. How you doing, Taylor? And what is your question?
Hey, I'm pretty good. Hey, Mateen. What do you think the biggest thing is that the Pistons should focus on in this year's draft?
Ah, great question. It's going to be tough because they got second-round pick. But I think they need to look to get shooters, because you got Andre Drummond. If they can get Greg Monroe to come back, you got good bigs now. So they got to get somebody that's able to stretch the floor to open up things for Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe around the basket.
Were you surprised he didn't get a first-round pick?
Surprised and hurt, too. You know, mm-hmm. I'm still a Pistons fan.
I am, too.
Yeah.
Took my LCD and threw it out the window. It's okay. Hey, give it up for Taylor. That was a good question. Thanks a lot, Taylor. All right, question number two comes from Faith from East Lansing, Michigan. How you doing, Faith, and what's your question?
I'm good. Mateen, who are you rooting for in the NBA Finals?
Oh, that's another one. Well, really, I'm kind of chill. I don't care who wins it. I'm just kind of watching it. I do think this year that San Antonio is going to pull it off. It's hard to go against LeBron James. He's the best in the business, but I love the way San Antonio play. They play so well together. So I kind of give them the edge. I think they're going to win in the seven games.
And you know what, Mateen? It's Thursday night. Who do you think is going to pull out this game tonight?
Miami, because, you know, they usually bounce back, you know, after a loss. So I think they're going to pull out. King James, he's going to be ready to play.
Tit for tat series, I tell
you.
Hey, thank you, Faith. Get up for Faith. Good question. All right, question number three comes from George from Belgium. How about that? What's going on, George, and what's your question?
Hey, Mateen, great having you here. I was wondering, like, if you could play for one coach other than Izzo, who would it be and why?
Ah, man, that's a good question. If I could play for one coach, it would be, and God bless his soul, he passed away, Chuck Daly. He was the Pistons coach back in the Bad Boy era. So I grew up as a fan of his and his teams. And I loved, he coached toughness. He kind of reminded me of Coach Izzo in a sense. So I was a big fan of his. So it'll be Chuck Daly, the leader of the Bad Boys.
Mateen, do you miss basketball like that? That gritty, hard-nosed hate?
Oh, man. Where
has it gone? Buddy-buddy.
Where has it gone, man? I do miss those days.
LeBron going out and sipping tea with Kevin Durant after games.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on,
man. It's different. It's different.
It is definitely different. Get up for George. Good question, George. All right, and last but certainly not least, Andre from Atlanta, Georgia. What's going on, Andre? What's your question?
I'm chilling. The question is, you brought up LeBron James earlier. It's a lot of hype in the NBA, comparing the two, LeBron James and Michael Jordan. So which one, in your opinion, do you think will win in the one-on-one against the two?
Well, they need to stop with the comparisons. You know, my thing is eras. LeBron James is the best in this era. Michael Jordan was the best in that era. And me, I looked at Michael Jordan in a different way because I was a kid watching him play. But looking at LeBron James, 6'8", they say 260, I'm going to say 270, all muscle. And in one-on-one, LeBron probably would get him because he could just bag him down under the basket.
He did not.
You're stuck in the old school. See, that's what it is. I'm old school, too. I don't want to say it.
Right.
But I got to keep it real. From the ATL, man. I got to keep it real.
That's true. I hear you.
That's one-on-one now.
It is one-on-one.
Yeah, that's a one-on-one game, mind you. LeBron James is 6'8", 270.
We'll agree to disagree. Okay. All right, Mateen, you the man.
All right. Yeah, Mateen, I have to disagree with you, man. I'm the biggest Michael Jordan fan you ever meet. I'm still going with MJ, the greatest, the GOAT. I see where you're coming from, though, Mateen. So, again, you can catch that sit down, folks, on Current Sports TV tonight on WKAR TV at 10 p.m. You'll get to see highlights from the Diamond Classic Finals. You get to see some highlights from the newest guard for the MSU men's basketball team in Aaron Harris. You get to see some of the notable award winners from the MSU Awards last week. That and so much more. It's a jam-packed show. Don't miss it tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV, my sit-down with my team, Cleve. You guys are lucky because we gave you guys a sneak preview of that today. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll give you Throwback Thursday, talk a little Tigers and NHL Finals. And also, hey, the U.S. Open is going on. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Boy, oh boy, well, we have 20 minutes left in the show. Really quickly, guys, each and every Thursday here on Current Sports is Throwback Thursday, where we take a look back at what happened in sports history on this particular Thursday in sports history, okay? So, today is June 12th, Thursday, June 12th. Let's take a look at exactly what happened on this day, Thursday, June 12th, 2014. There's going to be a variance of amounts of years here. So I'll start with, let's start with 1939. In 1939, on this day, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum was dedicated in Cooperstown, New York. How about that? A big accomplishment there, of course, when it comes to the Baseball Hall of Fame, one of the most coveted halls in all of sports. In 1948, Ben Hogan won his first U.S. Open Golf Classic. Ben Hogan, one of the greatest golfers to ever pick up a club. That happened in 1948. In 1967, the Senators beat Chicago 6-5, and get this, 22 innings, folks. The game lasted 6 hours, 38 minutes, and ended at 2:43 a.m. Nobody is open during, nobody's up at that time. 2:43 a.m. My goodness. And caused the league to adopt a curfew saying that no inning may start after 1 a.m. How about that? Now, in 1981, Major League Baseball players began a 49-day strike. The issue was free agent compensation. How can you forget that? 1985, Wayne, the great one. Yes, Wayne Gretzky. He was named winner of the NHL's Hart Trophy, the award given to the league's most valuable player. Wayne, I don't think there'll be anyone greater than him. That happened in 1985. In 1991,
the celebration has begun in the Chicago locker room, and they are celebrating in Chicago as the Bulls take the Lakers in five.
How about that? Yes, the great Marv Albert giving the call on the Chicago Bulls winning their first NBA championship. Yes, Jordan, Pippen, and company. Man, what a great team. The Bulls beat the Los Angeles Lakers 4-1 in 1994. Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman were murdered outside her home in Los Angeles. O.J. Simpson was later acquitted of the killings, but he was held liable in a civil suit. And if you've been turning on the news throughout this week and a little bit of last week as well, this is the anniversary of the O.J. Simpson trial, a trial that sent shockwaves throughout the nation and expanded beyond the sports realm. Man, oh, man, how can you forget the Ford Bronco, right? I believe the Ford Bronco was actually on display. And you can actually, I didn't know this, you can actually rent the Ford Bronco out and have it at a gathering or an event. I wonder how much that costs. But they actually have the actual Ford Bronco that O.J. Simpson drove during that whole high-speed chase on display. And you can rent it out for a party or special gathering. Man, that just shows you the impact that that trial had. My goodness. All right, in 1997, interleague play began in baseball, ending a 126-year tradition of separating the major leagues until the World Series. That happened in 1997. And in 2000...
Thank you. First to John and Denise and Jed York. Thanks for bringing everybody in, all my friends and family, and treating us like a king. I'm grateful to you. I don't know what your favorite memory, as I proudly wore number 8 in this stadium, would be. Whether it was the run against Minnesota, the touchdown against the Packers, maybe a championship game against the Cowboys. But for me, the memories are so innumerable. How many thousands of you have stopped me in the streets of the Bay Area to tell me that I was at Kezar. I'm in Section 16 since 1980. I've been in the seats and seen you play every football game. The faithful are the reason why we're all here. I'm grateful to every one of you for the memories that you've given me and my family. Every time I raise my hands, I raise them to you. Thank you, everybody. Go 49ers!
Ladies and gentlemen, please join us in congratulating one of the finest quarterbacks of all time, the great Steve Young.
How about that? What a powerful speech, a powerful presence at the podium as he addressed the crowd. In 2000, on this day, Steve Young, yes, the San Francisco 49ers, late QB, retired from the NFL. Steve Young does an outstanding job now, of course, on ESPN. But, man, it was fun. I remember, you know, back in the 90s when I became a fan of the NFL, watching Steve Young play, man, it was fun to watch him. And he's such a classy, classy guy. Well, those are your moments in sports history for this Throwback Thursday for June 12th. Man, what moments they were. Great Throwback Thursday today. Alex, how you doing, my brother? We got 10 minutes left, man.
Doing well, man. So rumor has it that Justin Verlander is getting ragged on, huh?
Yeah, well, you know what? We wanted to bring this conversation up yesterday. We'll do it today. And it's kind of fitting because, you know, I just happened to be on ESPN.com like I am every day. And yesterday I saw that ESPN.com, the insider here, so you had to pay. You had to be a paid member of ESPN.com. But on ESPN.com's insider edition, they had an article on whether or not Justin Verlander is now just an average pitcher. If he is kind of, you know, that whole aura of him being the most feared man at the mound, has that kind of gone now into the point of just him being sort of mediocre or average at best? And, you know, I want to get your thoughts on it because we wanted to bring it up yesterday. And now it's fitting now because as you alluded to in the headliners, Alex, the Tigers, they have now lost 3 straight. Struggles continue. JV was on the mound starting for the Tigers yesterday. They fell 8-2 against the Chicago White Sox on the road. And, man, it was not a great outing for JV. It was not a great outing for him. He threw less than 6 innings against the White Sox for the first time since September 26th of 2008. Verlander went 5 2/3 innings and allowed 8 hits, 4 walks, and 7 earned runs with 6 strikeouts. The teams were tied 1-1 in the 6th when the White Sox scored 7 runs, 6 with 2 outs. So, you know, reading those stats and looking at JV's outing so far to start this season, what are your thoughts on ESPN sort of alluding to the fact that Justin Verlander might just be an average pitcher now?
Yeah. First of all, with the statistics on the White Sox last night, keep in mind they're a little skewed because I actually watched this game Verlander comes out in the sixth. They put Kroll in. He gives up. He puts a hanging curveball right down the plate for, I believe it was Adam Dunn. So that was two more runs that really could have been prevented that added on to Verlander since he came out of the game. He was the last one to get to the two. So keep in mind that ideally he probably gave up five. And since 2008, I mean, congratulations. The fun's got to stop sometime. Personally, I'm not looking too far into that. But what I am looking far into in regards to the ESPN article is exactly what they're talking about. His velocity down. He's not as dominant anymore. I don't know if he's an AL starter anymore. I totally agree with that. But at the same time, there have been plenty of great pitchers that have also lost the velocity. It's just a natural thing, like the article explained, Al. Looking at Greg Maddux, looking at the great Nolan Ryan. I mean, these are guys that have had great fastballs, that have had to adjust, but these guys have an arsenal. It's not like you got a four-seam, a two-seam, and a change. Justin Verlander's got a four-seam, a nasty curveball, a change. He can throw kind of a slurve in a way, too. I mean, he's got a good arsenal of pitches. He's got a two-seam. Verlander can throw five or six different pitches. If this was Kenny Rogers, where you're throwing a four-seam, a two-seam, and a change, and maybe a slider, it's a little different. But the fact that Verlander has a huge arsenal, he's very accurate, and he's such a pinpointer, I think he's going to be okay, personally. What do you think?
Yeah, for me, I thought the article basically, you know, just tried. It was one of those attention getters to try to get people to read, especially those, you know, from around Michigan and our Detroit Tigers fans. And, you know, just the casual baseball fan knows the type of impact that Justin Verlander had a few years ago and just how dominant he was. It's natural for me, Alex, to look at a pitcher, especially going back in time and looking at the just dominance that Justin Verlander brought to the mound. I mean, it's hard to maintain that level of excellence year after year after year, especially as a pitcher. I talked to you before the show that the arm wasn't made for you to go out there and kind of torture it and to throw these 100-mile-per-hour throws. It's a lot on an arm, which is why, you know, baseball had to sort of find an alternative to helping these pitchers because that's their careers. And Tommy John surgery was born. It's the basically want to say that pitching is such a renowned art to it, and it takes a toll on your body so much that when you become on the level that Justin Verlander was a few years ago, where he was bar none the best pitcher in baseball, strikeout after strikeout after strikeout, it's hard to maintain that simply because your body won't allow you to do that over time. That's just being real. But I will say this. The article certainly was taken out of context here because I think that the article was produced to evoke some attention to JV and try to allude to the fact that he isn't the pitcher that he was. But there, by no means is Justin Verlander just an average pitcher. He's still, even though he's taking a back seat to his dominance that was a few years ago, he's still among the top-tier pitchers in this game today.
Yeah, and also, one other point to add is the reason he became the best pitcher is because he can throw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball with a 74-mile-an-hour curveball. Mm-hmm. And as a starting pitcher, the reason he became the best pitcher is because that was unheard of. And for him to do it so naturally and so consistently without any harms or any other inconsistencies or any doubt, it put people in the mind that starting pitchers, if they can find it, if it's a Yu Darvish, if it's a Chris Sale,
right,
they can throw upper 90s and still have a legitimate change in curveball.
And I think it created unrealistic expectations for fans
exactly.
Upon years moving forward.
Not,
you know?
Not just fans, but it created an unrealistic expectation for Justin Verlander's arm.
Right.
Because
exactly.
As much as that was a new model and a new thought process, he kind of told his arm, I'm going to be dominant for 2 to 3 years, and then it's going to tone back. Because when you look at 100-mile fastball pitchers, they're either relief pitchers like Joel Zumaia, who eventually lost his arm, or they're starting pitchers who can only go 2 years with that same speed. I mean, there isn't one starting pitcher out there that I've seen, correct me if I'm wrong, Al, that can consistently throw 100 miles an hour with a 72-mile curve for 5 years.
Yeah, it's tough. You got to be made in, you know, in a bat cave or something to be able to come out in there and do that. You got to have some special something's going on there for you to be able to do that on a consistent basis. But well, I tell you what, you know what? I really like that Verlander is taking the, quote, don't think too much approach to it. Because, you know, we've seen athletes in the past. I always go back to the Tiger Woods, you know, time in his career when he was trying to change up the way he hit the ball and his swing and his stroke. And it really hindered the way that he went out there and produced on the course. So much so, because sometimes athletes just think too much. And Justin Verlander had a great quote after yesterday's game. Quote, I really feel like these last three or four starts, I am where I want to be mechanics-wise. I'm just not repeating it yet. I hope it just clicks and happens next start, but I'm done messing around and saying, okay, well, something's not right. My stuff's not quite there. My breaking ball's not sharp. My fastball doesn't have life. It's there. It is. It's just reining it in. That was a great quote. I think that he's confident, because confidence is everything, especially in a position like pitching. Because if you approach the mound and you have no confidence, I mean, batters are going to eat you up every time you go out there. Justin Verlander's confidence is still right there, and he believes in what he's doing out there still. He'll be fine. I'm just shocked, Alex. Well, I'm not shocked, because we talked about this earlier this week on whether or not this slump for the Tigers would continue. And I said, I'm still not confident in this team right now, and they're still not producing, Alex.
Yeah, but at the same time, Al, as much as he's still solid with what he's doing now, he's not going to change anything more. The starting pitching is still producing. I mean,
it's still
four,
the best
four or five earned runs isn't bad.
It's still the starting pitching for the Tigers is still the strongest point on this team, I think. It'll get better as the season goes on. I'm not worried about it. It's just about, you know, guys coming up and being confident at the plate now, you know, and hitting the ball. One shining light to this whole Tiger slump, I have to say, has been Austin Jackson. He's been surprising for me, Alex, because he was 2-for-4 last night, and he's hitting 10-for-20 over a 6-game hitting streak right now, which is, that's .500. Austin Jackson is sort of woken up right now. Can he continue it? We don't know, but still, that's, if you're a Tigers fan, you have to feel good that somebody later on in that lineup is starting to get some confidence and starting to get something consistently going now.
Yeah, and how about Eugenio Suarez? No one even knew he existed.
Yeah.
No one even knew, because Romine is there. Iglesias went out. Peralta got signed by St. Louis. We were panicking whether they needed a shortstop now. They tried a bunch of different options, and look at that. Eugenio Suarez comes out from the minors. He wasn't even talked about in spring training. He wasn't even in conversation. It was Romine and Iglesias. And look at it now. They're starting to find options. They were talking about signing Stephen Drew.
Yeah, but they got to start winning, though, Alex. I mean, this is all great and fine and dandy, but these things have to start translate to wins now. So we'll see. Those are great. Those are two silver linings in this whole slump. Hopefully they can start to translate to wins now. NHL Finals, do you think New York's done now? They showed some resiliency, Alex.
Yeah.
They're still in the hills. It's 3-1 right now. It now shifts back to L.A. Do you think they end it there? Do you think the Kings end it there?
I think the Kings are going to end it there. What do you think?
I think so, too. I think they had one.
It's a smart pick.
They had one suck of breath left in them, and that was last night. But, hey, I don't see them winning in L.A. now. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you who tuned in today's Current Sports. Catch Current Sports TV tonight as I sit down with my team, Cleans. We gave you a sneak preview of that on today's radio show, but you can see the entire episode tonight at 10 p.m. on WKRTV. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Thursday, and be easy, people.